Yes, John Coltrane's band featuring on baritone sax, Sahib Shihab Coltrane, you hear later on, is on tenor sax. Johnny Splon on trumpet, Mal Waldron on piano, Paul Chambers on bass, and Albert Tootie Heath of the Heath Brothers on drums. This is from Coltrane's 1957 album, his first album for the Prestige label, and it sounds like the title of that should go with the times that we're in. It's titled Chronic Blues. This is Lead Stories. I'm Lucrece Lead, and we'll take a look at the news today, but from your vantage point. What you think is something newsworthy and news trends that you have been observing, and what you're getting out of it, if anything at all. So that's where we're going today. I was wondering, I just lost my notes here. No, I didn't. It's right here. This is what happens when you start getting old. Things are right in front of you, but you can't see them. Okay. So I have a bunch of questions to ask. So maybe we do a mix of I ask a question and I throw it out to you, you ask a question and see how folks react and answer it. The first question I'd ask, oh, let me, before I do that, let me just state that in Minneapolis, of course, the trial continues. However, it is in the jury selection phase, and the trial hasn't started yet, except, in the strictest sense, it technically has started, but the testimony and all the other things that we typically associate with a trial, they haven't started yet. They're sorting out certain legal issues, and they are beginning to question prospective jurors. We will, whenever they get through with that, we should hear something, but they're looking for about 16 jurors, according to the information I have. They're looking for 16, 12, of course, who will be the permanent jury, but an additional four, as is typically the case, just in case something should happen to any of the jurors who will hear the entire case. Okay, that's that. I wanted to bring you up to date with that. All right, so I'm going to ask you a question. And you will respond if you care at 888-874-4888. And there's a lot. Let's choose one of them. I'm looking. Are you leaning away from two-party politics? If so, what other options are you considering? Are you leaning away from two-party politics? What, if so, what other options are you considering? Is this a question that is running around in your mind based on your recent experience that with the system of politics that we have in the United States, which we insist is the best in the world, but is it fulfilling expectations? Is it responding, in your view, to your needs as a voter? Or are you looking somewhere else to get your politics in line? 888-874-4888. reason I ask this question is there's a sense I get from talking to people that, especially in recent times, two-party politics is played out. And being stuck all the time between the Democrats and the Republicans, it's not the way that one envisions a political choice. You want something more. You want to see evidence that the party systems are responding to the needs of the people and the needs of the times. So that's my first question to you. I want to know what you're thinking out there. Are you leaning away from two-party politics? And if so, what other options are you considering at this time? It's a bit, what should I say? It forces you to give it's not just a yes or no answer. You should have a little bit more to offer when you tackle that question. And I'd like to know what that thought is, or those thoughts are. I can also put another question in play. Is it too much of a challenge to have and raise a family today? Is it too much of a challenge to have and to raise a family today? That sounds like a simple enough question, but it really isn't. It's a very detailed question. I'd like to know your answer to that. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's hear from you. It's a different format I'm tinkering with here today to see how it works. We've done it before. And it was just to change the pace. We've been getting a lot of the news that we are getting lately is very taxing. It's putting us in places we really need a break. We need a break. Asher from New Jersey, we start off with you.
Hi, good morning, or good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good day, good evening, good night. Okay, about the first question, yes and no.
Okay, what's the question?
The question was, am I leaning away from a two-party system?
Okay. Yes.
And yes, I am, because one, the two parties don't represent the, how can I say it, the fullness of political ideologies. We have a far-right party and then a mid, a not-so-far-right party. Which is skewed. For instance, the vote for the $15 an hour when they were talking about putting that in the bill, and suddenly there is a person called the parliamentarian who decided that should not be in the bill. When have you ever heard of a parliamentarian affecting policy? Affecting what can be on the bill and what not.
Actually, the parliamentarian is there to make sure
the procedure
that whatever comes up for a vote fulfills certain requirements and doesn't stray, doesn't go overboard with it. So the parliamentarian is there as a kind of watchdog.
So when Trump was pushing the what did he call that, the tax, it was something with three words, tax bill, or the cut tax bill, or whatever it was, the parliamentarian was silent on that. But now that we're trying to boost the minimum wage to $15 an hour, that's a problem?
Well, apparently it is, because it's there now to be dealt with. The parliamentarian has spoken.
Okay.
So now people have to fight over that.
So here is a question. Is there opinion policy, or is it just a recommendation that can be overridden? From what I understand, it's just a recommendation that can be overridden.
Well, I don't know the specifics of it, except to say that the parliamentarian makes a recommendation based on how the law should be formulated so that it does not go beyond boundaries, certain boundaries. And then they fight over that. What ought to be in the law, what ought not to be in the law? Or the bill.
Okay. Can I say something else? Ran a tangent. There's nothing, to be honest, what really affects, there's nothing, this is going to be kind of controversial. It's not really that the fact that we have a two-party system. The real problem is how the funding for those two parties. If we eliminate the way the super PACs and how the donors and what was that saying? Your money is your voice. It was something like that. Money is free speech, or something to that effect.
Yes.
And if we eliminate that and we go to an all to where corporations and whatnot are not directly contributing funds and then getting their demands met, and it becomes more of a public system, then the system will take care of itself.
There also is a ruling, and it was equally contentious, that a corporation is a kind of person.
No.
And the same rights that individuals have, corporations ought to have.
Okay. I hate you, but that to me, because even if another party is introduced, let's say another two parties, that becomes a ultra far right party or a left leaning party, and then an ultra progressive party come out, and everything remains the same, it will just be two other parties that are going to fall for the same thing, and they all start leaning in that one direction.
No, not necessarily. Not necessarily, because they ought to have a very clearly stated philosophy as to how they intend to operate, and that itself would distinguish them from all other parties. So we don't need to anticipate that they will fall into the same trap or do the same thing. They may have an entirely approach.
Parties may not.
Thanks, Asher, for your call today.
Okay.
We're all swimming in the mud here. And this is part of the frustration. We don't seem to see progress made about clarity, in absolute clarity about what people or parties can and cannot do, and will be penalized for it, so that keeps, everybody reasonably, dare I say the word, honest. But we haven't seen that drive to get there. Thank you very much. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes, I think this is a very important question. And, we're constantly being bamboozled by those who lead. And those who lead are the ones in the ruling class, that fraction of 1%. the idea of having a so-called two-party system is, to me, really ridiculous, because those two so-called parties that we have, Republican and Democrat, represent essentially the same interests. They represent the interests of the ruling capitalist class that runs the country and is trying to run the whole world and is successful in many parts of the world. So those have the same interests, even though one is further to the right than the other, but they're both to the right. Occasionally, they cave in a little to the masses of people to keep down revolt. You know, things like Roosevelt and the New Deal. But the point is, we don't have a system of real democracy, as I see it, where people are represented by parties that represent their interests. You're limited to the boss man or the ruling class's party, and you pick among those two parties, just two parties. It's similar to having a prison, and you have two people running for the job as warden. So you pick among the two who are going to be the warden at your prison. So what is going on and what needs to happen, and that was part of your question, we need to have a different system where we can have numerous viable parties that represent the interests of the masses of people that live in the country. We need to have things done to make these state legislative bodies who make the laws about how parties can get on ballot loosen up so parties can get on the ballot, be viable parties, and we have different perspectives that include parties that represent the interests of the people. People have to understand that Republicans and Democrats, they don't really represent you. They are working for basically the people at the top, and their job is to manage the people. And this is one way they do it. They manage the people in many other ways, and the information you get, the newspaper, when you read, for example, the New York Times, which is supposed to be the paper record, you have to be an expert in understanding journalism, that much of what you see in the newspaper has nothing to do with journalism. It's putting forth a point of view that they are putting forth in the interests of those at the top. So we don't have a country where it's possible at this point to have viable parties other than the one-party system with two divisions, Republican, Democrat. It's really simple, but people don't understand it. As a matter of fact, you have people at the bottom of the wealth and economic society that we live in supporting a party that doesn't represent their interests. And we see that getting to be more and more the case as people get poorer and poorer. So we have a significant number of poor and near poor people that represent parties that essentially do not represent them. So the ruling class is brilliant. These are some most brilliant people in the world. because they're able to fool people and have them arguing about who's going to be Republican or Democrat when neither should be in, because they don't have their allegiance to the masses of people who live here. And I'm not saying that other countries don't have problems, but in some of the European countries, they have numerous parties and that represent different points of view. We have no parties that are viable other than the two at the top, Republican and Democrat. So that's what we have to do, is get on those state, so-called state legislator people, and make them change the laws. Let's do something peaceful if we can, so that parties, viable parties, can be created and everywhere, and there's a huge number of parties, and people can vote for a party that represents the interests of the people. There's no reason in this country where most of the wealth in the world is for people to be poor, for people to be hungry, for people to be homeless, for people not have the social and economic life that we should have, and put us at the top of the happiness index. And we're not at the top of the happiness index.
Thank you so much for your contribution today. Lincoln from Mount Vernon, you're on the air.
Hey, Eutrice, how are you? Hello?
Okay, Lincoln, how are you doing?
I'm fine. Persevering. Oh, I believe in a total referendum system. And in a referendum system, the people will have all the power. And when I say total, I mean to the extent that every law, every decision is concluded upon by the people. If we're contemplating raising the bus fare, the people vote on that. If we're contemplating, capital punishment, the people vote on that. And in doing so, we would strip politicians of their power. And politicians, we would relegate them into a place where all they are, they're just like moderators of a debate. And so what we would do is we would have the politicians just represent the various topics at hand, the various things that we're going to be, the people are going to be voting on. And so we strip politicians of their huge salaries and make them realize that if one person is homeless, then they have to be homeless. If they cannot be having high salaries while the minimum salary is pennies, you know. So I believe in a total referendum system. So and which means that we would have to educate the people more. So what would happen is politicians, so there's a bunch of topics, and the politicians would just represent the topics, and they would go and articulate on that particular topic for the people. You know, it's like a teacher comes to the classroom and the teacher says, this is such and such and such and such. Now, and then another teacher gives you another perspective, and another person gives you another perspective, just like religions. You know, you have the different preachers preaching on their various religions, and they give you the different perspectives. And then the people now choose which of the perspectives they want to embrace. So likewise, it would be the same thing. And every law, I mean, with excluding none, would be decided upon by the people. And so no politician would have any power. So we would do away with, what do you call it, the lobbyists. The lobbyists would be stripped of all their powers. And the presidents and the prime ministers, they would be stripped of their powers, because all they would be doing is just coordinating the various politicians who are coming to the people. And so no president would be anything special. And there wouldn't be no fancy house either. And they wouldn't even have to worry about being assassinated because they're not the ones making decisions. And so we would strip the Rothschild, et cetera, of all their powers, because on every job we would be voting on, every economic decision, every law. And so even money would be relegated to a different place. Money would not. Economics would then start serving the people and not the people serving economics. So I say I am for a total and an enlightened referendum system, which would have to entail educating the people on every level. It's that simple.
But you paint a very, very altruistic and almost it doesn't exist, or it can't possibly exist because it's too perfect. How are you going to get such a perfect system?
See, I'm glad you asked that question. And I think we have to be very careful of words like altruistic, et cetera. And, you know, it's like whenever you're planning on improving, like, you know, if I say I want to run an 8-second 100, you know, I'm not going to be worried about what the world thinks, whether it's possible or not. We should strive for perfection. So when I say what I say, I'm not saying it's going to be perfect, but we should be shooting for that. It's no different than saying we're trying to get to Mars. We are trying to get to Mars. And we are trying to get to as near a perfect system as possible. If we start saying, oh, that's too altruistic, no, then we're going to fail. We must strive for the best. And so when I say that, I'm not ignoring reality, but I'm saying that's what we should be striving for. Hello?
So, I'm listening to you. I'm listening. Okay, so in your system, how do you see it work for an entire country at the same time?
You see, I have contemplated that, I would set up a system where, say, we have like radio stations that are supported by the so-called government. And when I say government, I'm talking where everyone would be educated. I'm saying, when I say educated, I'm not talking about a bachelor's or a master's degree. I'm talking about where people come and we the so-called illiterate, we make them become literate and we expose them to philosophy, etc., and debates, etc., etc. And we try to disabuse people of all their idiosyncrasies, you know, the racism. It's no different than, like, say, you say, okay, we're going to retrain the police. So likewise, you have to retrain the people. And when I say retrain, I'm not talking about it in a way called, you know, some pompous way. I'm talking about saying, you know, the same way you retrain the police, let them become sensitive to everything, you know, to other people and their needs, etc. And so we say now you minimize the possibilities of racism. You minimize the possibilities of all the abusive parts of society. Then it will increase the chances of people voting for things that would be for the general good rather than a selective good. Because, you know, I have thought about it. What about if we have a bunch of racists who are voting? Yeah, they're going to want to vote in their favor. But if, just like, say, the police, when we say let's retrain the police, it doesn't mean that every police is going to be good. But it does mean that we are trying to make as many police as possible be good and be responsible and accountable. So that it's a system where, yes, because we're dealing with imperfect human beings, but even in the midst of, you know, like planes are not perfect, but they still fly. They crash every once in a while, but we don't stop flying them, you know. So that's how the system would be. And they keep trying to improve the planes and the, you know, the different technologies. And likewise, we should be doing that with our system, because our system is like the human body, where every part has a function. And if we find that a part is not working right, we try to medicate that part. We try to heal that part. And so that's what we would be doing constantly, to try to make this be
so in your mind, how long would this process take before it takes hold?
To tell you the truth, you know, I had this, I wanted to actually do this plan in Jamaica, and I had started, but I didn't, I've been a little bit delayed because the name of my party is called the People's Referendum Party, and suggesting what it would be about. And it would take a little time, but one of the things we would do is to buffer the people, to buffer the pain, I would want to introduce a system where everyone have some basic salary, you know, everyone's basic needs are attended to, everyone have some a certain amount of housing, etc. And so that while we are fixing the system, we take the people out of pain. You know, like for example, I'm going to show you something. You hear them talk about the middle class, and we have to protect the middle class. In an emergency, if you go to a hospital, who do they attend to first? They attend to the people with the gunshot wounds. So we need to attend to the abject poor. You know, all this about middle class, protect the middle class. No, we attend to the immediate wounds. And the immediate wounds are the homeless, the people who are, have no source of income, the people who have no education, etc. You see, all
well, you put forward for our consideration today a very comprehensive
So I would like to say this. So when you hear me even speak about the Trumps, and I'm not speaking about them in terms of how I think. Now that you know my politics, if you hear me speak of a politician, it's not in defense of them. It's just saying, okay, this is what we have for right now, and let's deal with this. But I support none of them. None of them. Because they're all crooks and liars. They're not for the people.
Oh, my. Painting with a broad brush, aren't we?
No, you know what I mean. When I say none of them, I mean, generally speaking, you three.
I have to keep you on point. That's what my point was. But thank you so much for your contribution today, Lincoln. Thank you. Much to consider. Ed from Queens, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, you three.
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing? How are you doing?
I'm hanging.
I'm not so far flung as everybody else. I mean, I don't want to reinvent the wheel because time is short on this planet, and time is short, I believe, in this planet's life. So we got to use what we got. This system wasn't always this messed up. And this system, no matter how flawed it is what we got to work with. And it takes involvement. I've always been a person who believes all politics is local. All politics is issue related. And if you concentrate on the issues in your locality and take control of your local politics, eventually it will build and it will grow and it will become something national. We all forget about the Tea Party. How did the Tea Party start? The Tea Party didn't start as a Republican flux. It started as grassroots. And then certain individuals took over that grassroots and turned it into AstroTurf roots. But it initially started locally. A group of individuals wanted to change the politics in their area. They took over local elected officials. They took over local party mechanisms and got their people in. And their people pushed their agenda. And that's the best way to work it, good, bad, or indifferent. You're going to try to reinvent the wheel. I don't believe people are that conscious or will be that conscious. Or I don't believe American people are that dedicated. So I think we should work with what we have and where we can make some measurable goals and some attainable goals and not all this pie in the sky garbage that everybody's talking about.
How soon could such an approach or plan be implemented?
Be implemented right now. It's already been implemented. I mean, we've got perfect examples. You had Operation Push in East New York about 10 years ago with the barons, and how that whole area, which I used to live in, became renovated and wasn't gentrified. You've got other local, you've got the Tea Party, a perfect example. A bunch of local individuals took over auspices, took over the Republican Party, got their elected officials in, until you had Newt Gingrich with the Contract on America. I mean, there are examples there, good and bad, depending upon your objective opinion. But the mechanisms are there. You just got to get in the game. You know, you can't sit on the outside and blame the ruling class or hope for some type of altruistic bubble to burst. This American politics aren't like that. If you know anything about the history, it's always been local. It's always been grassroots. And from the women's suffrage movement to the civil rights movement, it's always been a small segment of the population forming a critical mass and forcing the politics through. That's what it's always been. No matter how many big corporations take over, no how many big or billionaires are in, it's always been that way. That's how we got the New Deal. That's how we got Social Security. That's how we got civil rights. That's how we got women's suffrage. That's how it works. People have become apathetic due to ignorance, I believe, and a lack of the school system and not understanding the basic principles on how this government works. And it's easy to point a finger at the great them and opt out.
Well, thank you. You know, you see what you get when you ask people to talk from their own perspective. This has been riveting in my view. I'm paying strict attention to what people are saying today. Thank you so much for your call. Henry from Chicago, what have you to say?
Hey, Chief, how's it going?
Okay, how's by you?
All right. Looks like the weather's breaking a little bit. We're at like 65 degrees right now.
Wow, that's a heat wave in Chicago.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Saturday it's going to be 40 degrees. So we'll be back to reality on Saturday.
that's what I was hinting at.
I think I'm going to be the oddball today and talk about the other question about family. Now, if okay. I'm correct, you asked, is it harder to develop and raise a family in today's society? Is that correct?
Yes, but not just harder. Is it too much of a challenge to have and to raise a family today?
Yes, I definitely believe that it is it's a huge challenge to raise to have a family today. And I'm only speaking from this, from the perspective of myself, who is a black male who has a family or trying to raise a family in a major metropolitan city. And I say that in a sense because of the fact that when we're talking about black and brown people and families, having to develop families in these areas, you know, there are a lot of things that impede the progress of our families because of the fact that, you know, obviously, you know, as men of the family, you know, we're supposed to be kind of like the providers and the protectors, and we are the ones who have, you know, the most unemployment. We're the ones that are likely to be, you know, accosted by, you know, police. So that actually, you know, becomes an impediment on developing family structures. And as far as women, you know, there's a lot of issues with health with women. There's a lot of issues in our communities with, you know, dealing with racism. But you know, there's a lot of impediments that does not provide a lot of incentive on building families. And then, you know, also, too, there's a second part when you're talking about families, because, you know, for me, the definition of family is basically having a commonality with somebody and then building off of that commonality through a relationship. So we're even talking about not just bloodline families, but also extended families as well. And unfortunately, we don't really see that in the Black communities, because and you have said this on your show, and I agree with you, that we don't have a sense of community in our, you know, with our Black people. And the building blocks of a community is family, you know. So you have to have the building blocks of family to have a community. And a lot of our families are fractured. A lot of our families are not, you know, being developed correctly. And part of it also comes to the sense of having difficult relationships just with each other. And I think a lot of that is attributed to these extreme identity type of topics that, you know, we have to deal with. One being the long-standing problem of misogyny. You know, we definitely live in a misogynistic society. But then also, too, you have the other extremity of, you know, feminism, which, you know, for me, I think is just more of misogyny, but except females just dominating the society. And nobody's talking about nobody is talking about or teaching how to be men and women, working together, working as co-leaders, working cooperatively. You know, it's always, you know, no, we got to run this, or men got to run it, or no, women got to run it. And nobody's giving the issue of, can we just run this together? And this goes into, you know, the topic of, you know, of marriage, which to me is not being highly promoted, you know, within the Black community. But, you know, marriage is something that that also is not getting enough attention. And I think, you know, when you're talking about the basis of a family, you know, in terms of, especially on a spiritual level, I think marriage is a very it's a very healthy thing to have, you know, in order to stabilize the, you know, the family structure. But that is not even being promoted. So, yes, it's a very difficult task to, you know, build and sustain a family in this modern day society.
So what's the secret weapon for those like you who strive to do exactly that, to raise a strong family?
Oh, man. I don't think there's one secret weapon. There's a lot of things that can be done to help, you know, sustain, you know, a family. And needless to say, nobody told me it was going to be easy, because it's not. It is not at all, especially when you're talking about, you know, marriage and children and trying to, you know, raise your children and trying to understand the your children's friends and people who your children interact with, how to interact with them. But I think it all comes down to having a relationship with, you know, having a healthy relationship with those within your family circle and those outside of your family circle. I think that's the broad problem of it, is that we're not having healthy relationships with each other.
That is quite profound. Do you think there's hope to get it fixed in such a way that we have a more cohesive family unit and therefore a more cohesive community?
Oh, yes. Yes, I definitely see there's hope. And I think the best way to do it is to just it's basically when I talk about that broad when I talk about the broad solution of having relationships, basically all it is just kind of, you know, showing yourself as a person who, you know, that can have, you know, certain relationships or be examples of people who, you know, who might want to consider, you know, having a marriage and raising children. You know, my perfect example is my parents. And my parents, you know, they've been married for almost 50 years now, still together. And I grew up in that particular, you know, household. Now, unfortunately, I was one of the few who had a two-parent household, but I was able to see firsthand what a marriage looks like. And don't get me wrong, wasn't perfect, not at all. You know, my marriage is not perfect either, but at the same time, it's all about the relationship. It's all about how we treat each other. And if you set an example like that, other people can see that. And so when, you know, like somebody came to me and my wife and a person that, you know, knew us for a long time and asked, did we ever argue? And it's like, yeah, we argue a lot. But the thing is that we never argue in public. You know, yeah, we argue, but we don't argue in public like most people do and act all crazy. You know, we get in the house and start throwing our dishpans.
let the plates fly.
Yeah, but when we're in public, we have a united front, you know, and that's what you need to show to people about what a relationship looks like.
Well, this has been a very refreshing entry, and we have an exclusive. You're the only one raising this question today. Everybody else chose politics. Let me ask you about that. How come you chose this subject?
Because I think this, I kind of knew somebody was going to touch on the political side, which, you know, I would, half of your show is that, you know, but I think this is important because of the fact that if we can develop, like I said, if we can develop communities, if we can develop a community, and like I said, the basis of a community is family, you know, families make up communities. And if we can get a strong community together, then the politics will fall in place. They will fall in place.
Okay. Well, thank you, Henry, for your contribution today. Very refreshing. And also reminds us that we have a bit of work to do in that area because our communities need a little bit of tightening up. We are too separated from each other. So we should look to families and building families that would in turn build stronger communities. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, I have time for one more call, if you call fast, 888-874-4888, and I'll squeeze you in before we go. But if not, I thank you so much for today. I had no idea that it was going to strike a chord. And all these ideas are percolating even while we don't know. We don't know that you're thinking this way out there. So it's good. It's good to hear you articulate what you think. It doesn't matter whether people agree or disagree. It doesn't matter. It matters only that you are sincere in what you're offering for our consideration. And you've thought things through. There's clear evidence of that in your calls today. So that makes me, that comforts me a great deal, because it would have been, I probably would not have been able to sleep tonight if these kinds of answers weren't offered for our consideration. but they have been. It means that you've been thinking. It means that you have been raising these ideas in your mind. Oh, we do have one person calling in. Muhammad from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Yatrice.
Good afternoon.
I sincerely hope your health continues to improve. I just want to talk a little bit about the. You're very welcome. I just want to talk about a little bit about the family and just what a family is. One particular problem that we in this particular country have is we don't know who we are. We don't ever really know who we are. Now, I'm going to just talk about a family a little bit, if it's okay.
Well, we as I said, we have a little bit of time.
Okay.
The emphasis on little.
Okay.
Little bit.
One thing in education, see, a family is a system. That's one of the first things we should learn about in our education, about systems and what systems are. I say that because we ourselves are a group of systems. Now, family is a system, and here are some of the major components of a family. First, you have boundaries. You have rules. You have roles. And you have communications. You have affective communications. Communications is where people relate to each other. Affective is where you talk about whatever on your mind when the family meet. And that's basically at mealtime or dinner time in the old societies, people would talk about their feelings. Okay, the fifth one is problem solving. And again, at the dinner table in the old societies, people sat down and talked. They presented their problems and, the family would come around and offer suggestions and offer you solutions. Now, the sixth element in that family system is decision-making. And this is made at the executive level. That's the mother and the father. Everyone would have their input when they come together with the communications, and then the decision would be made by the mother and the father. And that's all
but
I want to say about
there are families that are very different from the mother-father model. There are many families that are headed by a single parent. There are families that are headed by same-sex parents. There are families that are headed by elderly parents because of tragedy experienced within the home. So we have to anticipate that the notion of family itself has changed dramatically for most of us. In our communities, we have an overabundance. I'm not saying that it is a bad thing. I'm saying this is what it is. We do have a large population of single female-headed households. And from time to time, we see the expression of the downside to that, where people just cannot handle the responsibility by themselves.
Okay. I would just like to make one last comment, you three.
Yes.
Generally, when we look back at the family again, right, basically and originally it was a mother and a father. And we changed over the years, like you just said. And with that, I'll leave it like that. I hope we got something out of that. But that's one of the first things we should learn about our systems. We have, they said, 11 systems with the body. And it's a group of functions that all work together to keep the whole, the intact, the whole.
Now, Muhammad, I have to ask you these questions. For as many times as I have raised with you the question of that thing beeping because you haven't replaced the battery, what is the problem?
I'm going to Home Depot today. You're tracing, I'm going to get me a ladder and I'm going to get up there and fix that. And please excuse me for bothering you so much with that.
No. Here's the thing you need to appreciate. You have one shot. What if this segment that you just went through was so profound that it needed to be replicated and distributed on a wider basis? And you have that interrupting a profound presentation, that's quite a distraction. So commit, please, to fixing it.
Okay, I'm going to the Home Depot today and get that ladder and fix that. And thank you for staying on my case, because many people get on me about that.
Okay, thank you. Thanks so much.
And I wish all your audience the best.
Thank you. And so we do come to the end of our program today. Glad that we had time for Muhammad and time for you to express yourselves. And we'll meet up again tomorrow and talk some more. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.